Welcome. This is Bob Keebler on behalf of Lineberg Information Services. Joining me today is Skip Fox, a partner in McGuire Woods and contributor to CCH's product and calculators on carryover basis. Good morning, Skip, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Bob. I'm delighted to be with you.
I thought what we'd do today is go over some of the more esoteric and difficult issues that practitioners are beginning to see with carryover basis. You and your partners have spent an inordinate amount of time on this, and I know you truly have a deep understanding. So, Skip, primarily we're going to cover three things. One is the difference in the step-up between 1014 of the code, the traditional step-up in basis, and Section 1022, the new carryover rules. Two, I'd like to get your latest thinking on formula clauses. And finally, we'll wrap up with a little bit of discussion on fiduciary responsibility, how to allocate basis, and whether or not you should elect in and out of the estate tax, not from a tax perspective, but from a pure fiduciary perspective. Skip, let's start with a question. Help me understand the difference between the step-up in basis when I die and I have a power of appointment at the moment of my death, and that power of appointment would normally include that property in my estate if we were in the estate tax system, but when we're under carryover basis, we end up with a different result and different basis treatment.
You're absolutely right, Bob. You've pointed out one of the stranger provisions, I think, of Section 1022, which is where carryover basis is set forth in the Internal Revenue Code. And essentially, as you stated, if you die and the estate tax applies to you, Section 1014 permits a step-up in basis for all property included in your estate, no matter what the reason for the inclusion of that property in your estate. So it could be property that you owned outright. It could be property in which you were the beneficiary of a Q-tip marital deduction trust that your spouse set up for you when he or she died. Or it could be a trust over which you have a taxable general power of appointment. And in each of those situations, if a decedent's estate elects into the estate tax regime, you'll get a step-up in basis for all of the property. But that's not the case when you go to carryover basis and you want to see which property is eligible for the step-up in basis, or so-called general basis adjustment available to all decedents, and the spousal basis adjustment available to surviving spouses, provided that the property passes in certain ways. There, only certain property that is included in the estate of a 2010 decedent who elects out of the estate tax into the carryover basis regime will be eligible for having the basis adjustment, be it the general basis adjustment of $1.3 million or the spousal basis adjustment of $3 million, allocated to appreciated property in the estate. And you pointed out power of appointment property, property over which a decedent in 2010 has a general power of appointment whose executor has elected out of the estate tax, is not eligible to have the basis increase allocated to it. The same is true with Q-tip property, in which a surviving spouse has an interest in a Q-tip trust established by a decedent spouse many years ago, perhaps. This has made planning very difficult. Another example might be where a person set up a grantor-retained annuity trust. As you know, under the rules for grantor-retained annuity trust, the annuitant has to survive the set term. If the annuitant fails to survive the set term, the assets in their grantor-retained annuity trust are included in his or her estate. But under the carryover basis rules for 2010 decedents, even though the property in that grantor-retained annuity trust where the annuitant failed to survive the term will be included or would be, have been included in the estate for estate tax purposes, it's not going to be eligible for allocation of either the general basis adjustment or the spousal basis adjustment.
So, Skip, the three trickiest issues here are probably power of appointment property, Q-tip properties, let's say my wife died 5 years ago and now I die, and that Q-tip property is not going to be eligible for a step-up basis, and then gifts within 3 years. So are those, would you say those are the biggest things, or do we have to look broader than that?
I think those are probably the three biggest issues that most 2010 decedents will face, Bob. And it is one of those trickier situations. And I think the one that you just mentioned with respect to property that is distributed within three, or a gift made of within 3 years of death, is one of the more difficult provisions to deal with, simply, again, because what you're dealing with is an alien concept, not of whether you get a step-up in basis or not, but whether you can allocate the basis adjustment to that property. But basically what Section 1022D1C1 says is that neither the general basis adjustment or the spousal basis adjustment will apply to property acquired by a decedent by gift or lifetime transfer during the three-year period ending on the date of the decedent's death. But then it goes a little further and makes life even more complicated, because it goes on to say that this prohibition on being able to allocate basis adjustment to property acquired by gift within the three-year period ending on the date of the decedent's death, in turn, does not apply to property acquired from the spouse during the three-year period, unless, and of course the service can't make it, I should say Congress can't make anything simple, unless the spouse acquired the property by gift or lifetime transfer for less than adequate and full consideration. So it's a fairly complicated, tortuous rule that you have to look at when you're looking at these gifts within 3 years of death, and you just wonder why they even included this as part of 1022. So I guess it somewhat goes back to those old rules under Section 1014E, where they were trying to prevent a person who might be dying soon from being the recipient of property and then leaving it back to the donor and getting a step-up in basis when he or she died. Now they're saying you can't allocate the basis adjustment in similar situations, but not quite the same rules.
Skip, let's jump over to formula clauses. So we've talked about this before, but I die, my will says the exemption amount to my children, the remainder to, let's say, Marquette University. So walk me through that. Is it really possible this election can change the disposition of someone's property?
I think the election very much can change the disposition of someone's property, Bob. And let's take your example. If a person stayed within the estate tax regime in 2010, and let's say they have an estate of $11 million, well, under the law as stated by Congress retroactively back to January 1, 2010, in that situation, with the formula you gave, $5 million would go into a credit shelter trust or for the benefit of the family, and $6 million, the amount that could not be sheltered from estate tax by the new $5 million exemption, would go to Marquette University. But let's say you elect out of the estate tax, as you're permitted to do for 2010 decedents, and you elect into the carryover basis regime. Well, there's no estate tax. So there is an argument right there that the entire $11 million estate, in the example I gave, would go to the family members, either in a form of credit shelter trust or outright, because since there is no estate tax, there's nothing to be sheltered from. On the other hand, one might make an argument, depending upon how the formula was written, that because there's no estate tax, if your formula refers to the amount that can be sheltered from estate tax, the entire amount should go to Marquette University, all $11 million in the example we just gave. Now, further complicating this are the rules that about 20 states enacted when it looked like there would be no estate tax in 2010. Back in early 2010, these included states like Virginia, Pennsylvania, Florida, a whole host of states enacted rules that said, well, if there is going to be no estate tax, and because we want to carry out the intentions of the settlor, we're going to say that we're going to apply a formula as if the rules in effect on December 31, 2009 still apply. And that's when you had a $3.5 million exemption. So in our situation, where if you elect out of the estate tax, go to a carryover basis, the state may have a law that essentially says, let's look at what the law was on December 31, 2009. In our example, we'd allocate $3.5 million to the family, the amount that could have been sheltered from estate tax on December 31, 2009. And we'll allocate the balance that can pass free of tax to charity, to Marquette in the example, which would be, I believe, $7.5 million would go to Marquette. But here again, you're opening yourself up to various arguments, because some of these state laws say, well, these rules basically apply only if there is no estate tax. Well, Congress reinstated the estate tax back to January 2010. They just gave you the ability to opt out of it. So do these state statutes even apply in this situation? So there's already a bit of a mess with respect to those states that tried really to help out decedents dying in 2010 when they thought there was no estate tax. The state statutes that were supposed to be corrective, supposed to try to help carry out a settlor's intent, really instead may have created a mess that does not carry out a settlor's intent, and basically will just lead to litigation between the different recipients of property over what the settlor's intent was. The irony of this, of course, Bob, is that the settlor would have had no idea when he or she died that we'd have a $5 million exemption in 2010, and it wasn't on anybody's radar screen when this was talked about. All that was really on people's radar screens was that there might be a $3.5 million exemption, there might be no estate tax, but very few people thought there might be a $5 million exemption that you'd have to deal with. And well, I think it's going to mean a fair amount of litigation.
No, and speaking of litigation and fiduciary responsibility, spend a minute and quickly give us a broad overview of allocating basis and what the responsibility of a fiduciary is.
Well, as is always the case whenever an election has to be made, the fiduciary, in this situation, if a 2010 decedent elects out of the estate tax and into carryover basis, has the ability to benefit one beneficiary or one set of beneficiaries over another set of beneficiaries. For example, you might have a situation in which appreciated property is passing both to a surviving spouse and to other family members, perhaps pursuant to a formula that would say that $5 million goes to the other family members and the balance goes to the spouse. Well, in that situation, the executor might say, well, I can allocate all $1.3 million of the general basis adjustment, as well as the $3 million spousal basis adjustment to property passing to the surviving spouse. Or I can allocate $1.3 million, the general basis adjustment, to the property passing to the other family members, and the $3 million to the surviving spouse. Now, in families that are harmonious, say there was one marriage, this may not be that big a problem. But with respect to families where you don't have harmony, where there might be a spouse from a second marriage or siblings who simply don't get along, the decision on how to allocate the general basis adjustment or the spousal basis adjustment could cause some dissension, because, again, you've got the ability as an executor or the other person making the election to benefit some beneficiaries over others. And this means that executors face a huge responsibility, and it might mean that in order to keep everybody happy, they might just give equal amounts of basis adjustment, say if you're dividing it between two siblings to the two siblings, or you might do it on a pro rata basis among assets. There are going to be all sorts of different ways that executors approach it. I think the bottom line, however, Bob, is basically going to be that if executors really want to protect themselves, they're going to want to get the consent of the beneficiaries, be it children, be it spouses, whomever, to whatever allocation they make. They're going to want to make sure that the beneficiaries are represented by separate counsel. And if they can't get agreement from the beneficiaries, I think you'll see a lot of executors going into court and basically getting court approval for whatever allocation proposal or they come up with respect to both the general basis and spousal basis adjustment. And this might especially be true if you have an executor who is also a beneficiary of an estate, because the potential for conflict there is just huge, where an executor could allocate, say, some of the $1.3 million general basis adjustment to himself or herself. I mean, for example, you get a spouse who's also executor and says, well, I'm going to allocate not only the spousal basis adjustment to appreciated property passing to me, but also the general basis adjustment. It raises a whole host of issues, and it means that executors will just have to be quite careful. And as I said before, they are probably going to be going into court a lot more just to have a court give its blessing to whatever proposed basis adjustments the executor wants to make to prevent beneficiaries from coming back several years from now when they don't like what was done or they think the way it was done was unfair.
Well, thank you, Skip. On behalf of Lissy and everyone who will benefit from your podcast today, we'd like to thank you for your insight on these perplexing issues and hope you come back in the future. And as this evolves, we're going to want to talk to you again because undoubtedly this will be a very dynamic year.
Thank you very much, Bob. I'd be delighted to come back.